Last case on our calendar, 04-1301, Howard Ward versus the Kroger Company. Mr. Serra.
Court, please, I would like to reserve 3 minutes, please, on rebuttal. Your Honors, this is a case that I took over at the trial level, as I do many of these cases. I don't do administrative work. And this gentleman had a torn medial meniscus. Through the process of discovery and obtaining medical records, there was evidence that there was pre-existing conditions. During this time, the Robinson case was decided. So I'm sitting on this case saying, goodness, now what do I do? Do I not amend my complaint because the reading of Robinson, and I know what the Seventh District Court of Appeals said, they said they're not the same, and I respectfully disagree. I think they are exactly the same. By reading Robinson, I am mandated to file an amended complaint to include the aggravation conditions. I therefore did that, tried the case, and we came to a conclusion.
Counsel, was that your only option in light of Robinson?
No, it was not, Your Honor, and that was mentioned to me before. Well, why don't you dismiss your case, go start over again? And I just have a problem with that because I'm not one who dismisses cases. I don't like to dismiss cases. I use it for an emergency, basically, if something happens, a witness dies or something like that. And my client, you know, and then that was going to work its way through the court system again. So if you win that case, then Kroger's files another appeal, then you're starting over again. And I thought this was the quickest way to
But ultimately, your amended conditions, or the conditions, introduced in the amended complaint, that was your strength. That's what prevailed here.
It is, Your Honor. Correct. That's correct. It is. It's what prevailed, and I just want. I just thought that I don't like to use the term judicial economics, if there's undue prejudice to somebody. But here's a case that we tried one time. We had a full litigation of the facts, and as a matter of fact, I was put. Unfortunately, at the administrative level, they do a great job. The hearing officers do a great job, but you've seen these cases. It's unfortunate. They get a 15-minute hearing. They get short reports. There's no depositions. And I get the benefit of a trial aspect of it, where there's a volume of records. We see the history. We see MRI scans in more detail, different readings. And from day one, their doctor, and it's in the evidence, contended, oh, this guy has pre-existing arthritis. So I'm going to court getting beat over the head about, oh, well, no, this all pre-existed, and the other side's contending I'm not allowed to defend myself. Well, okay, if it did, and this tear existed before, then there was an aggravation. And I thought this was the best way to resolve it. Now, granted, this is a difficult decision in some respects because it affects so many cases. And there's a whole spectrum of what could be decided. Here's the Robinson case. Which is fairly restrictive, and they told the lawyer, you have to amend your complaint to do this the first time around.
Well, counsel, you're here now, and what I'm wondering is, could you describe for us in a perfect world, we can modify Robinson if that's causing a problem. In a perfect world, which is the better way? What would you see as the better way to deal with the kind of problem you discovered upon the efforts of your discovery that existed in this case? Would it be to go back and start over? Or is it to do what you did here in terms of the, as you indicated, this will impact lots of other people and other cases.
Yes,
so what would be the better
and
fairest and most efficient approach, considering everybody's rights?
The most practical approach, in my opinion, Your Honor, my humble opinion, is this. If you read 4123.512, everybody argues in their briefs all these cases that aren't really related. And that just tells you you have jurisdiction over this case. The common pleas does. And it's a trial de novo. And the legislature, there's too many laws now, and they can't go legislate every word. So thank goodness we have judges and we have courts. And 9 times out of 10 are usually they are reasonable people. And a practical approach, I think, Your Honor, at least in a case like this, is if we're looking at the same body part, the same exact body part, and there is no undue justice, no undue burden on one of the parties, as in this case. In other words, Judge Brazees, in his wisdom, said, yes, you can amend the complaint, go back and see my bailiff, get a continuance to trial, make sure everybody has time to prepare, get it, whatever you want to do. And the other side, under no circumstances in this case, can say, oh, well, geez, I got blindsided. No, you had plenty of time. As a matter of fact, my expert's deposition was taken in May, and theirs wasn't taken until months later, and their expert, Dr. Cunningham, had the benefit of reviewing my whole expert's deposition, and they had the benefit of getting another opinion. That's the reasonable approach. Now, I would not sit here and contend, goodness, let's go to court and claim we have a bad back, and then about 5 months before trial say, you know, my client's shoulder hurts. I think that's out of line. That would be my personal opinion, and I see a lot of this trial work. But when you're talking about the same exact body part, and I'm not even just talking the knee area, I'm talking about the torn medial meniscus. And if it was arthritic and torn before, then we have aggravation. And I think that in essence, Your Honor, would be the best approach. There's a lot of arguments that the other side contends, oh goodness, well, the rules of procedure do not apply because it's an administrative animal. Well, how come we can 41A a case under workers' comp? They do apply. And I just think if we put our practical and reasonable hats on and apply the Rule 15 aspect to it, and be practical and fair, and one of the guidelines for amending complaint and being arbitrary or not allowing amendment, I think, is undue delay. And by amending this complaint, my client at least got these conditions heard. He had to have surgery and still hasn't got his benefits in that regard because it's on appeal and it was reversed. And, you know, we won it, it was reversed. And I think that is the more practical aspect of it, to make a law saying, well, you got to appeal everything this day. Well, what can you ascertain exists on that day? That's a tough call. That is really a tough call. Yes, Your Honor.
Doing what you suggest, though, really undercuts the BWC, doesn't it?
I do not think it does, Your Honor, because if you read 41-23-512, it's a general statute that gives jurisdiction, and it's a trial de novo. And I think in the laws and the briefs, and there's all these cases cited, but there's only this many cases that pertain to this exact situation. And I think if you look at the cases that are in favor of my side, and look at that result, you will find that there is no harsh result, generally speaking. We've litigated these issues. The conditions are litigated. And I'm not trying to undercut the Bureau. I'm just saying, well, if we, and generally speaking, to be frank with you, I've never had the problem before because generally when this comes up, when they do discovery, I call the other counsel and say, listen, there's a couple of these other things that overlap. They're the same. Well, why don't you amend the complaint? I'll give my consent. Let's get it done now.
Let me stop you and go to the statute. Claimant or the employer may appeal an order of the Industrial Commission an injury, occupational disease, other than a decision as to the extent of disability to the trial court. Here, the order did not include the two conditions that you added at the trial, and that's the argument. That's the argument that, I mean, that's the reason, the rationale of the Court of Appeals opinion. Of course, obviously, then it's the rationale in the appellee's argument is that the order being appealed from is a specific order. It says these are the conditions either we recognize or don't recognize for which there'll be compensation. By adding something to the case in the Common Pleas Court, you're going outside the order, certainly. And isn't that why should we do that? Why shouldn't the General Assembly decide that you can do that? The General Assembly, again, it's a statutory scheme here, and we're applying the words of the statute. It seems to me that the General Assembly wanted the appeal to be confined to the order. Whatever the order encompassed, that is what's appealed to the Common Pleas Court. Your amendments go beyond that, and that's the problem.
I understand, Your Honor, an excellent point, and that's why I'd like to make two quick points there. Number one, if I were amending to include something outlandish, a completely different body part, that would be different. We're talking same body part, but different medical terms for this same body part. And a lot of the case law you read says, well, we're talking about the same body part. And number two, Your Honor, I have the Robinson case out here that I think I'm bound by. And number three, if you look at the orders, and I've attached them in my appendix, you look at the district hearing officer and the staff hearing officer. The district hearing officer, both in the notes and in the order, says they deny this claim both by direct causation and they use the word aggravation. And they use that word, you see. And then the staff hearing officer incorporates that order into their opinion. So that term was brought up, and they're the ones who brought up about the pre-existing condition from day one. They're the ones that kind of suck this thing into the trial, and that's why I think it's relevant. And I'm not saying in all cases, goodness, you should amend, and I think that's a little bit absurd. But when you have very similar cases, I think the Williams case, where there's psychological conditions and these things overlap, and sometimes it's called this or this. In this case, we're not only the same body part, we're talking the meniscus even.
Well, I guess I didn't think it was just a different medical term for the condition. I thought they're different. It's a different condition, may be the wrong word, but it's not just a different medical term, is it?
It's a different condition, granted. I agree, Your Honor. Yeah, it's a different condition, yeah. But they so much overlap in medical terms, and when you're talking about the same exact body part, then what do? You say, oh, well, geez, we found out this is a problem, we go back again, and then we go back again. I just think that's a problem, keeping going back.
If you don't prevail here, is there anything to prevent you from going back with these conditions?
No, Your Honor, because of Clemente, or the flow-through condition, we are not prevented by a two-year statute, and we could go back, and I did not do it earlier only because I thought it proper to be before this court first, and because that's why I didn't have Tim Bainbridge do it earlier. He's the administrative lawyer. I don't do that, so that's why, Your Honor.
Mr. Seraph, in your proposition of law, you talk about the court exercising its sound discretion to authorize additional claims, the two aggravations that you presented. But there's nothing in 4123.512 that gives that authority to the court.
You're correct, Your Honor, and there's nothing that doesn't, because it's a very general statute. And all it says is it's a jurisdictional thing over this issue, and then we have to look at case law interpretation.
The difficulty I'm having is that the legislature seems to have limited the jurisdiction of the court to an order of the Industrial Commission made under Division E of these sections of the revised code, and not anything else that the court wants to bring in as an adjunct to that.
That's correct. And if the order maybe doesn't address one of the issues, in this case, they did mention aggravation.
I appreciate it's the same body part, and it seems like we go through another exercise.
If they don't address one of the issues, then it's just, that's my contention. At some point, the practical aspect and the reasonable aspect, I would contend.
Isn't this something that if the legislature intended this course of action, that they would amend that statute, and isn't that the way that we would get this done?
At the beginning, yes, Your Honor, I said, but they can't possibly encompass everything and said, well, you're only allowed to do A, B, and C. There's too many laws now. So I think they defer to the courts to interpret this thing in their wisdom, and I think that's why we're usually better off. So,
thank you.
With that, if there's no more questions, I'll reserve some of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Seraph. Mr. Schramm.
May it please the court, Your Honor. I am Eric Schramm of the firm Hanlon Duff Estat and McCormick, and I'm here today on behalf of the Kroger Company, along with my law partner, Gerald Duff, and Mr. Marty. Mr. Marty and I have agreed to divide our time equally, so I will.
The red light will come on in 7.5 minutes of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor. If I could, it's actually 4 years to today is 4 years to the day that Mr. Ward was injured, and 4 years to the day that, as Mr. Seraph just told you, he has yet to bring before the administrative agency the two alleged conditions for which This appeal now arises from the aggravation of pre-existing degenerative joint disease and the aggravation of pre-existing arthritis. He clearly can still do that before the administrative agency. And what the appellant today is inviting this court to do is to legislate, eviscerate the statutory construct, and really relegate the workers' compensation administrative process to meaningless exercise, where it's just a conduit to get one condition up into the trial court and then add whatever other conditions you'd like to do. Not only does Mr. Sarup seek to have this court completely ignore the legislature's express intent as embodied in ORC 4123.512, but also as a byproduct to completely ignore other parts of the statute, including ORC 4123.51,
which
specifically, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
He's actually denying that he wants to make it as expansive as you're alleging. He's claiming that when you have the exact same part with conditions related to the exact same part versus a different part of the body, it makes judicial economic sense to perhaps bring those out. So help me understand the medical issues here. Why are these two claims not the same body part or totally different so that they should start a whole different administrative process? Because he's arguing for a very narrow expansion of the ability to bring these claims as rising out of the same body part. And that, I think, is a little different scenario.
If I could, Justice Stratton, he's not arguing for a very narrow definition. I respectfully disagree. He's talking about a body part. Now, I don't know whether the body part means his leg. I don't know whether the body part means the knee. I don't know whether if we have a neck strain that comes up as an allowed condition, the body part means two cervical discs or the entire neck. And let me give you an example. If Mr. Sarup's under his analogy, if the body part is a neck strain sprain that comes up, do we now have a trial on the issues of a herniation at C6, C7, a herniation at C2, C3, and cervical radiculopathy and degenerative disc disease? All these conditions now come in. You open up the floodgates. 4123.51 is a statute that really speaks to this, and it says precisely that workers' compensation claims can be most expeditiously decided by the Bureaus of Workers' Compensation, the Industrial Commission. In this instance, the aggravation of pre-existing osteoarthritis and the aggravation of degenerative joint disease, more than likely two 15-minute hearings, one before a district hearing officer, one before a staff hearing officer, could take place and resolve these issues. And the trial court is never burdened with these decisions.
Mr. Schramm, in this case, there was adequate time for discovery by Kroger and adequate notice. And isn't it in the sense of judicial economy that you could litigate these issues only on the right to participate? And then the matter goes back for other determinations.
Well,
how does that frustrate the system?
Well, let me quote from the Fealty versus AT&T Technologies case decided in 1992 by this honorable court that said, courts simply cannot review all decisions of the commission if the commission is to be an effective and independent agency, unless a narrow reading of RC 4123.519, the predecessor statute, is adhered to almost every decision of the commission, major or minor, could eventually find its way to the common pleas court. The narrow rule is consistent with the goal of creating a workers' compensation system that operates largely outside of the courts. Public policy favors interpretation because otherwise common pleas courts would be burdened with de novo review, if not full-blown jury trials in every ministerial order. Let me give you some statistics, Your Honor, if I could, that would help you out, provided by Mr. Marty. The latest statistics we have is the Industrial Commission decisions in 2003 dealt with 200,515 claims. Of those, 512 appeals accounted for only 8,263, or approximately 4%. The system
counsel,
works. The statutory construct works.
Counsel, I think we can all see the benefit of letting hearing officers resolve these matters first. Here, counsel for the claimant indicates that there was a denial of some pre-existing condition as a part of the order.
No, Your Honor, that's inaccurate. If I could be precise, the district hearing officer.
Well, you heard him say the same thing.
I did.
Okay.
I did. And actually, it's part of the fault of counsel here that those conditions still aren't before the Industrial Commission for an order which vests the court with jurisdiction And I think that maybe gets back to your ideal question, is the court doesn't even get jurisdiction until there's an appeal of 512.
All right, well, let me take you back
and
to...
May I address your question precisely?
Sure.
The district hearing officer order, the employer certified the claim for a sprained strain of Mr. Ward's knee. The district hearing officer specifically denied the claim for a medial meniscus tear and chondromalacia. No other conditions, precisely the conditions that came to trial, the amended complaint conditions, ever were brought before the administrative agency. Even though the claimant's own physician says it aggravated his osteoarthritis, claimant's attorney simply chose and choose to this day not to bring those issues before the commission to get an order they can then appeal.
Going back to the commission, do you know the position of Kroger with respect to the claims that were eventually found to be covered claims by the trial?
The aggravation, claims, which are the amended complaints, so they're on appeal.
What's the position of Kroger with respect to those?
My guess, Your Honor, without actually asking my client today, would be that aggravation has such a low threshold. The standard for aggravation workers' comp claim is not even medical testimony. It's the claimant saying it hurt worse. And in that case, they would probably certify the claims for aggravation at the administrative level. Thus, I would never have had a trial to defend.
Right. I understand that. But
the rest, you're talking about judicial economies. We never have all that.
You understand where my question's going, too. If it were the position of Kroger, that we don't think that those claims have merit, shouldn't be covered, and we're going to fight them. If you go back and the claimant wins, Kroger would have the right to appeal too, wouldn't they?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And
so you'd be right back in front of the same judge.
Perhaps. But what happens in these cases are when all the conditions are brought up before the administrative agency, then what we have are consolidated trials if these issues come forward. But what really happens is, as in the case of 96% of the claims, they never come to the trial courts.
We understand that.
Yeah, yeah. You never have to deal with them. So this idea of judicial economics is turned on its head by Mr. Serap.
I apologize for not. I want to put the same question to you. In the perfect world, what do you think, when this issue pops up, as it did in this case, trial counsel discovers through more comprehensive information that there's another approach to this claimant's injury that would seem to indicate coverage. What's the better practice?
The better practice, Your Honor, is to honor the statutory construct and the legislature. And all we had to do was ask Judge Brazees, may I have a continuance, Your Honor? Why have these matters heard administratively, which takes perhaps 2 to 3 months?
Do we have to modify Robinson in any respect?
No, absolutely not, Your Honor. You don't have to modify Robinson. There was no reason to have a res judicata argument. Everybody recognizes flow through. Mr. Serap himself said he can still raise these issues and get them heard administratively. I don't see any reason to modify Robinson. I don't even think it came into play here, and neither did the Court of Appeals.
Counsel, looking at the order that you were referring to, there's a statement that the claim is disallowed for medial meniscal tear and chondromalacial right knee by direct causation or aggravation based on the reports of Dr. Cunningham. Now, that was in the order. You said at one point that the order did not discuss aggravation at all.
No, Justice, if I could be precise, the order did not discuss aggravation as separate conditions. We're talking about proximate causation. Was it a direct cause of the meniscus tear, or was it a cause of the degenerative joint disease which caused the meniscus tear? Ultimately, I prevailed at trial by showing that this gentleman had, since 1974, a history of degenerative joint disease and had a meniscus tear much earlier. And that's what the jury understood about the medial meniscus tear that actually happened in January, not when he was stepping down his stool. What Mr. Serap did when he amended his complaint out of fear for Robinson and res judicata was to add two discreetly different conditions without ever having them heard by the administrative body, and thus there's no order, no appeal, and no jurisdiction for the trial court to even go forward and amend the complaint.
So you're saying that the order itself, the condition was stated as right knee sprain. That's what the that's what the administrative agency was looking at. And even though we have words such as the ones I just read relating to aggravation, that did not mean that the court then had jurisdiction over any aggravation based on that knee problem.
Let me see if I can be very precise. The employer certified the claim for a right knee sprain based on the ER reports and the IME of its own physician. The claimant then asked for, based on Dr. Kumar, me, and the orthopedic surgeon, an allowance for a medial meniscus tear and chondromalacia. What the district hearing officer and the staff hearing officer found was the medial meniscus tear and or the chondromalacia were not caused, proximately caused, or directly caused by the direct injury of stepping down the stool or the aggravation of the underlying degenerative joint disease. So it's not a condition, it's a causation issue that they were dealing with there.
Okay, thank you.
I believe I'm over my time, Your Honor.
Time for
Mr. Marty.
Mr. Marty. Thank you, Mr. Schramm. Mr. Marty, you have about 3.5 minutes.
Sorry, how much?
About 3.5 minutes.
I'll be brief. Good morning, Your Honors. I'm here on behalf of the Bureau. And the Bureau's interests are a little bit broader than the parties. We're grappling more with the perfect world that you all seem to appreciate is involved here, because this goes on across the state in a lot of different areas. There's two competing lines of precedent here, and this court needs to sort them out. One line says you can add new claims or new conditions that weren't before the commission. Another says you can't. And I think the only position that can be reconciled with the statute in particular and the structure in general is the second line. The statute, as you noted, deals with orders. And orders are a defined term under the revised code. They deal with the nature of the disability recognized in the claim. They're focused on the particular medical condition at issue. And to allow a claimant to go beyond that and interject new claims or new conditions goes beyond the scope of the order and hence beyond the scope of the statutory granted jurisdiction.
Counsel, should we, if your view of what would provide, as Canadians like, order to all of this, would be that these are new claims back to a hearing officer for an administrative, should we instruct the trial courts where the case is already pending that case should be kept alive until such time as the administrative procedures are completed?
The Bureau doesn't have a position one way or another on that. We don't want to see the claimants whipsawed or they can't get back to the original
right.
claims. But I think either the trial court could exercise its discretion to continue, or you could do a 41 dismissal and come back under the saving statute when the whole thing was resolved.
But you've got a year.
You do. You do indeed. This court's precedents already provide that.
But would the administrative matter necessarily be complete?
Oh, it would be complete well before the year has expired. I think we're talking a matter of 2 or 3 months as opposed to a year. The other reason I think that supports the decision below is the overall structure of the workers' comp system. I think it's fair to describe it as sort of an inverted funnel, with the administrative process being the broad end at the bottom and things coming out the narrow end for the courts. This court has consistently held that people can't get around that structure by advancing new claims in the courts or new defenses in the courts that weren't presented below. Of course, decisions in Lewis, Miles, and Quattro stand for that proposition. I think they alone drive the result that was reached below. I think my time is up.
Mr. Marty, let me ask you a question. Are you comfortable with the reasoning and the analysis offered by the appellate court in this case? Does that give you the clarity that you're seeking?
I think it was basically sound. I think it could be amplified or built a little bit, but I think its two theoretical bases are correct. The nature of the order and the order language in the statute and the structure of the system as a whole.
When you say you think it can be, did you say embellished?
Well, amplified, I guess, is a better word. I mean, it came out in 2 or 3 paragraphs in the appellate court's opinion. I mean, no criticism, but I think it could be fleshed out a little bit along the lines that
Counsel,
we offered in our briefing.
Do you see any need to modify Robinson in order to protect the claimant?
The Bureau does not want to see claimants get trapped here, get mousetrapped. So I can't say whether Robinson needs modified, but if it's a court's opinion that it does, I wouldn't hesitate to do that. If there are no other questions, I'll...
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Marty.
You, Your Honor.
Mr. Serap, you saved a little more than a minute of your time.
Yes. Just 2 points real quickly. First of all, and all due respect to other counsel, I've heard this argument in the appeals court and the Supreme Court, by implication, oh, well, if Mr. Ward goes back and applies administratively, he wins, we're not going to appeal. Well, you've got all the evidence, a jury trial determined the conditions should be allowed, and now I'm in the Supreme Court and we're still in appeal. So I just think
yeah, but aren't they appealing a whole principle that's at stake, not just your, I mean,
I guess so.
They've lost at a jury trial. They're not going to be too foolish to try to appeal this again, I would think.
And I would love to go back and win it administratively, and if they are in court, I'd like to send everybody a copy of it. Secondly, because that's where we're going to be, in front of Judge Brzee. Secondly, just real quickly, I disagree with the Robinson. I think if you decide against me that Robinson does need modified because they're the same thing. They applied for degenerative disc disease, didn't appeal that one, those lawyers, and then they applied for aggravation, appealed that one, and they said it's res judicata, you should have brought it up before and put it in the court. If I lost my case on my medial meniscus at Jefferson County and then went back and filed for aggravation and they brought up Robinson, I'm a duster, I'm done. So I think that that is consistent with this. And it's been a long time since I've been here, Your Honor, and thanks for having me back again. And it's been a pleasure and been an honor. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Sheriff. We'll have you back again if you have a good case for us. Thank you. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. The marshal, please adjourn court.